It's a six-letter word for everyone's favorite five-letter word puzzle game. The viral sensation is now owned by the New York Times, and a lot of people want to know what the Times plans to do with it. How does Wordle fit into the news organization's larger strategy? Will it go behind the subscriber wall? And who comes up with all the words? Those are a few of the questions for this week's Reliable Sources podcast. So let's cue the music. I'm Brian Stelter, and this weekly podcast is our chance to go more in-depth, talking with media leaders and newsmakers about how the media world really works. And of course, the media world increasingly relies on subscription revenue. It relies on people paying for the news and for all the associated apps and sometimes games that come along with it. I suppose it's not that different from the print newspaper coming with a crossword. But now, in this competitive digital age, something like Wordle can make a meaningful difference for a brand like the New York Times. In fact, the Times has said that tens of millions of people are playing Wordle, and that's bringing some of them more deeply into the New York Times ecosystem. So to talk about all of this, I sat down with Jonathan Knight, the SVP and head of games at the New York Times. As you're going to hear, he joined the news outlet almost 2 years ago, and he had no idea that Wordle was going to happen. But then Josh Wordle invented Wordle, and they came together in a deal that was struck in January, bringing Wordle into the Times family. But that's enough for me. Let me get out of the way and present my full interview with Jonathan Knight. He's a really interesting character. You can hear him talk about how games fit into the Times portfolio. And then toward the end, I get into those burning questions everyone has about Wordle. Hey, Jonathan, thanks for coming on. Nice to talk with you.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
I just wanted to start with your title, to be the head of games at a place like the New York Times. I don't remember there being someone who was a senior vice president for games back when I worked there about a decade ago. So it says something about the trajectory of the Times. But I was wondering if you could tell us first about your trajectory. What brought you to the Times?
Well, I was like really thrilled at the opportunity. They reached out to me. I've spent my whole career in kind of traditional computer and video game industry. And I was really impressed by the New York Times commitment to games as part of their strategy for the future. I thought it was an amazing opportunity built around the crossword success with Spelling Bee, and now with Wordle, a real portfolio of games that are very unique to the Times. And, we're just seeing tremendous growth with our game subscription business, tremendous engagement with our games, and very excited for the future. So I'm very happy to be here.
You've been there almost 2 years now. Tell us about where you were before and your experience in that traditional gaming world.
Well, I spent about a decade at Electronic Arts. That's what brought me to the Bay Area. I came up as a producer in the video game industry. I spent another 5 years at Zynga here in San Francisco. At EA, I got to work on The Sims, which, at the time was the most successful PC game franchise of all time. It's still like an incredibly strong franchise. And some of my best formative years were at Electronic Arts working on that incredible franchise. At Zynga, I did a lot of things. I was a GM there, and I ran the Words with Friends business for a while. I think that brought me closer to sort of the word puzzle audience that's kind of looking for that mental challenge as well as a bit of fun in their day and kind of a social experience. And got a real affinity for that audience. It's brought me here to the Times with, what I think is our leadership in kind of the word puzzle category.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting to hear about that progression in all these different parts of the gaming business. When you think about something like The Sims and people's relationship to these titles, to these franchises, do you see any similarities to people's relationship to news, to information, to what the New York Times does at the rest of the publication? Or is it just totally completely different businesses?
Well, games are a diversion from the news, and that's how we think about it. Obviously, we want to have games that challenge people's minds. Our audience at the New York Times is a curious audience. They're curious readers. They're curious about the world. And, you know, our mission is to, like, you know, engage those curious people and help them understand the world. So, you know, our games, I think, are connected to the mission of the Times in that way. But the first crossword puzzle, I like to tell this story. The first Sunday crossword ran in 1942 in the paper. So we have a long tradition of games being part of the news. And at that time, it was a tough news cycle, as we often face today. And it really was intended to give people a bit of a break from the news, which can be a tough read. So that's how we think of it. Like, it should really feel like, you know, a bit of a dessert after you get through the news.
Right. And it creates a more of a well-rounded experience for the reader or the consumer. When you joined nearly 2 years ago, certainly Wordle wasn't on the horizon. But what was appealing to you, and now so much of the Times and gaming is associated with Wordle, but what was the pitch or what was appealing about coming over to a news organization for you?
Well, I mean, the first and foremost was just kind of the mission of the New York Times to help people, like, find the truth, seek the truth, and help people understand the world. Like, I think to work on games, to work on a product that sort of contributes to the independent journalism that's so important at the New York Times is super rewarding. So, I find great value and meaning in the work that way. So that was like the number one draw.
To be clear, you mean help to pay for the news, help to finance the journalism.
That's a big part of what we do, absolutely. And, take great pride in the fact that we've got a strong and healthy game subscription business that's contributing to the overall, company mission. Absolutely.
What were the other, that was your first motivation. What were the other ones for you to go to the Times?
So what I saw in terms of the games product was, which surprised a lot of people, I think, that I knew. Yes, you think of the crossword puzzle when you think of the New York Times, but it was almost exactly 4 years ago that the Spelling Bee launched. And with Spelling Bee, we sort of added the second product that just really came and stacked right on top of the crossword in terms of engagement, driving subscriptions. And we're kind of no longer just the crossword. We had sort of like the promise of a real portfolio of games. And Spelling Bee is more accessible. We find that people play it together. It's a little more mobile friendly, and it's got a big community on Twitter. And so I really saw that with that game, like I said, the promise of a portfolio of games, and that really hooked me, because I'm very excited about the New York Times as kind of a platform for games. You can play our games on the news app. You can play them on the website. We have a dedicated crossword app where we've added Spelling Bee and we'll be adding Wordle. So we have all these surfaces. We're, doing a lot of work to unify the back end, to bring more games and more content to people. We have a gameplay column that sort of sits alongside the games product, where we're doing a lot of like community engagement. We have forums and features, tips and tricks. So there's a real, kind of platform for games there. And so that, as a game maker, lifelong game maker, that was exciting to me to be able to build for the future. I think we're going to have a generational product with New York Times games. And, we're really doing a lot of that foundational work now to set us up to do just even cooler things in the future.
And remind us, how much of this is accessible to a basic, New York Times subscriber versus how much is accessible only if you pay separately for the crossword? How do the layers work?
So the crossword is requires a games subscription. On our crossword app, there's a 7-day free trial, but by and large, like, a crossword requires a subscription. Some of the other games have like free to play, sort of sampling. So with Spelling Bee, you can play a limited version of the game, and then as a subscriber, you get the full experience. And with Wordle, it's free to play for everyone, and that's how that game got started. And currently it continues to be like free to play for everybody. So depending on the game, our crossword mini, which is a really fun like 5x5 puzzle you can do in a minute or so, is also free for everyone. So it depends a bit on the game. But our sort of premium product is that daily crossword puzzle and the sort of advanced version of Spelling Bee.
Right. So about $5 a month, $40 a year, you get all these games. But as you said, Wordle free to play currently. When will you put it behind the paywall?
you know, we don't have any plans to do that. I'm always a little cagey on this because we never talk about like our plans for the future, you know, with regards to our business model. Like, if you ask me, is the Mini ever going to go behind a paywall? I'd give the same answer. Like, we don't know. We don't have those plans at the moment. So, you know, we're very focused on what makes Wordle great. And a big part of what makes it great is that it's accessible to everybody. And we're all trying to solve the same word every day. And we're seeing just continued, you know, very large engagement and reach with the game. So our focus is on like continuing that experience.
All right. So you had about a year, well, a little more than a year at the Times before anything Wordle related happened. What would I don't know if you would draw a line between, you know, pre-Wordle and post-Wordle. Well, would you? Would you segment your time at the Times in that way?
So far, absolutely. I mean, look, there's just no getting around it. Wordle was a massive moment for us. You know, it's very rare to see a game, you know, hit the zeitgeist like that and just capture the, you know, frankly, like global imagination. It wasn't just limited to the U.S. We saw like a ton of international love for Wordle, like, and to see a game like just really hit, like, I mean, it was crazy. It was a viral phenomenon, and still like a very, very, you know, strong obsession for many, many people. So we were thrilled to, you know, be able to bring the game into the New York Times. And absolutely, like, there's definitely kind of a pre-Wordle, post-Wordle, you know, vibe going on. You know,
I want to get into the timeline of it, but are there analogies to other games that have those viral moments where they capture, like, can you think of others in your career that were similar at all to Wordle?
Well, I mean, every few years there's a Pokemon Go, like Among Us, I think was the first kind of pandemic viral game. You know, Words with Friends. You can, if you want to go back that far. So, you know, definitely every few years. I mean, look, games are universal. Games have been with us since the dawn of time, and they always will be. It's in our nature to play games and to play games socially. And so, I think, yeah, like we always, every few years, there's something that just kind of really captures everybody. And, you know, the proliferation of mobile devices has really, you know, made that like, you know, even easier because, you know, once it starts going around, you can just easily get it on your phone. So, yeah, there's definitely examples of that. I think Wordle was really special and unique for us because, you know, the creator of the game, Josh Wardle, is on record as saying he was a fan of New York Times games. He and his partner played Spelling Bee and the Crossword Mini, and it was really very much on his mind as he was creating Wordle. And so it you know, not only was massively successful and had a great audience, but it seemed like it was kind of almost ready made to be brought into the New York Times portfolio of games. So it was, you know, I think a lot of stars aligned with Wordle.
Right. He launched it in October of last year, October of 2021. And I would say what? It was in December. Was it in December? Was it around Christmas that it seemed like everybody was playing? Or what was it? Was it early January? How would you describe that period of time before you all swooped it and acquired it?
So a lot of people were playing in December. It was going around. Some folks on the team were playing it, and there was a little bit of buzz there. On January 3rd, I believe, the New York Times did an article on Josh Wardle. The game at that point had grown from, you know, 100 friends and family, you know, kind of in the fall to, by January 3rd, I think 300,000 people were playing Wordle, and it was basically blowing up, and he hadn't expected that. And so that was really, I think, that article that we published. And then, you know, Josh and I spoke a couple of days after that article, and we went from there. And the game, yeah, continued to explode.
Right. It just had this upward trajectory. So you were talking to him for basically the entire month of January about a possible acquisition.
That's right. Yeah, we started. Yeah, that's right. Hmm.
In retrospect, did he make the game hoping to sell it to the Times? You were talking about how the stars aligned. Was it that intentional?
Well, I mean, I certainly can't speak for Josh, and you know, don't want to speak for him. I don't think he that my sense was that his intention was to make a really fun game for him and his partner and share it with friends and family, and that he was kind of as surprised as any of us about its popularity and its growth. You know, we definitely, I feel like, had a lot of synergy from the beginning. He's stated publicly that he thought the Times would be a great steward for the game. And we hope we've lived up to that. Like, we have tried to really stay true to what made the game great. And I think we've essentially kept that experience solid, and we're looking to, you know, bring more value to it. We don't want to change it or harm it in any way. That was always our intention from, you know, do no harm was kind of the phrase that was going around the team in the beginning. And, you know, with things like WordleBot, I'm not sure if you've heard of that or if any of your listeners have, but yeah. WordleBot is like a really awesome experience on the New York Times where you can kind of go deeper every day with your Wordle solve, and it analyzes the choices you made and compares you to other people and gives you like an additional rating on your skill and the luck factor and all this sort of thing. So that's kind of our focus. And I hope we've lived up to what Josh hoped we would do.
But let me stay on January for a second. Tell me about those conversations with him. Were there other bidders, or was it just you at the table?
I can't go into those details. Those conversations are between us. We're really happy to where we got to. And I think by January 31st, as I recall, we were able to, you know, announce the acquisition. Everybody was happy.
And it hit like a lightning bolt. I mean, in the media industry, it was this moment of, oh, this is a brilliant move by the New York Times. Of course they're going to buy Wordle. It syncs up with the subscription model and the crossword model so effectively. And frankly, Jonathan, as you know, there's a tremendous amount of jealousy among other media companies that they didn't get to it, that they didn't buy it. I think we're going to look back, and this is going to be one of the great steals in media history. I know that you all haven't said exactly how much you paid, but the Times said it was an undisclosed price in the low seven figures, and this thing has been on fire for the Times ever since. So January 31st, you all buy Wordle. What did you have to do to make it sink into the Times and work with the Times website? Was there some kind of crazy complication behind the scenes in February?
Yes. it was a lot of fun. I want to give a shout out to my team, the New York Times games team, the engineers, the product managers, the project managers, designers, marketing. The team really rallied and made this happen and with a ton of urgency. You know, basically what we did was we essentially right away kind of redirected the game to a New York Times URL. So if you were hitting Josh's site before, then you would hit that site and you would just be automatically redirected to newyorktimes.com/game/Wordle with no difference in the experience. And in that way, you know, we were then sort of like beginning the process of, you know, having that audience live on our site versus Josh's personal server where the game started. From there, we worked through a bunch of technical challenges, and we're still working through them in a lot of ways. The game is, it's a web game. It's a client authoritative game, not to use too fancy a term, but
that's okay. Tell us
what
it means.
There was no back end. Well, it means that the whole game lives in your browser, on your device, and there's no data stored. There were no servers. The solutions to the game were in your local browser as well. So that's just how he set it up, because again, he was making it for his friends and family, for his partner, and never anticipated that it would blow up the way it did. So, you know, step one for us was to acknowledge that the game is, you know, it just sits in your local browser storage. And, you know, as time went on and we wanted to maybe change a word on the solution list or address different, you know, challenges users might be having with refreshing the game or what have you, that, you know, we needed to fully integrate Wordle into our systems. There were some rewrites, there's some, connecting it up to the back end. And a big part of that was, you know, the stats and streaks, which are very important to people. Those were locally stored and not really connected up. And so, look, if you get a new iPhone and play Wordle on your new iPhone, it doesn't know who you are. And so you're going to lose your progress in your stats and streaks. And that's something we're very focused on. And we're really on the cusp of solving that for people. So, going forward, if you choose to, you can create an account with New York Times, or if you already have one, a free account, then Wordle will recognize who you are, and your stats and streaks will be stored, and you'll be safe. You won't lose them if you accidentally clear all your local cache and your, you know, or if you get a new iPhone. Like, these are ways in which people suddenly lose all of their stats. And, you know, here we are in June, and some people have been playing Wordle every single day since December and are very proud of those streaks. So, again, yeah, that's been a little bit of the focus. And as we got into February, you know, understanding those technical challenges was what we did.
And just to get people listen to how this works, it starts with one person, Josh Wordle. How many people do you now have working on, you know, making this work for so many people and saving their streaks, et cetera? It must be a lot more than one person doing it.
It is. I mean, we don't disclose our team sizes, but, you know, there's a couple dozen people that are,
all right, we'll say, know, a lot more
touching
than one.
This Wordle project.
Yeah. Right. No, but I think it's helpful for people to understand. And you see a game that seems so simple, so easy to use, so user-friendly, but in order to make it that way, it takes a village. It takes a lot of folks to keep it humming for millions and millions of people to make it seem so easy.
That's exactly right. I mean, you see this kind of the tip of the iceberg when you play the game, but when you think about wanting to have a reliable game service that you can count on every day to work across any device, and, you know, for all of us to be solving that same word every single day, which is really important. And then, you know, the future things that we want to do to bring more value to people. It does take a good sized team.
Yeah. I have lots more questions for you. Let me fit in a quick break. More with Jonathan Knight in just a moment.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back here on the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter, speaking with Jonathan Knight, SVP and head of games at the New York Times Company. So we're talking about Wordle. I have so many more Wordle questions, if you don't mind. First, where are all of the answers, you know, the five-letter answers? Are there like 5 years worth of answers all just stored up already?
So I don't know the exact number, but we have a few years worth of answers, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we're, you know, looking at is, you know, to have a better sense of like more editorial control over what those words are. We want to make sure that the word list remains really approachable. I think that's one of the great things about Wordle is that the words that we're solving are very common words that that people know. And so like being able to make sure that is always the case. We look at things like, you know, we want to make sure for our audience in the UK, for instance, that we're not, you know, using American spellings of words that would frustrate them. There's some layer of editorial oversight that we want to provide, and now we're, more able to do that. We initially, and there was a little bit of controversy around this because I think it was very quickly after the acquisition, we identified a couple of words that were on the obscure side, and we wanted to pull them out and replace them with words that were you know, more common, but because of the tech and what I was saying earlier about the local nature of the game and everything being stored in your browser, the changes we made weren't seen by everybody, and we kind of split the list for a couple days. Some people got one answer, some people got another answer, and you know, there was this a week there where the words were a little bit harder to, you know, just like it was kind of a random thing that the words got a little harder for a few days. And, you know, there was a big controversy that the New York Times is making Wordle harder on purpose.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Was that real?
Nothing could be further from the truth. We were literally actually trying to make it easier, and in doing so kind of exposed that not everybody got the same word every day because we're still working on the tech. But yeah, actually the opposite is true. We were just removing, I think one word was Agora, A-G-O-R-A, and we felt that that was a little obscure and removed it. Yeah, you know, like the controversy persisted nonetheless.
Right. And then there was the word fetus being swapped out amid the Roe v. Wade draft majority opinion about abortion leaking. Are there going to be more episodes like that where you have to swap out a word because of the news?
Well, I would say, I mean, I can't predict the future. We're moving into a phase where we have finer control over that. And like I said, the sort of technical issues that we faced early on made that a little messy. And going forward, I think it'll be clean. Like even with the spelling bee, we're always taking a look and making sure that, you know, we want the games to be fun. The focus is on a diversion. You know, we want to have people have a little moment of delight and fun and reward. And you know, the news shouldn't be in any controversy, and the news shouldn't be mixed up in that. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that.
For now, we're still mostly getting Josh Wordle's original answers.
That's right.
Wow. And then almost there's a year's worth. That's amazing. When you think about the success of the game since February, since the acquisition took effect, what's the most recent metric you can share for how many people are playing Wordle?
What I can share is that Wordle brought tens of millions of people into the New York Times. And, you know, like it's a very, very big game. We don't have any other data to share beyond that. And, you know, we're very pleased with like the continued engagement with the game.
Right. Tens of millions is outstanding. Any media company would dream of that. Is there evidence that it also draws gamers into the Times news coverage? Like, are there people that are reading Times articles now only because they started to use Wordle?
It's a little hard to say that for sure. I think absolutely that we've introduced the news and our other products, whether it's cooking or Wirecutter, recently The Athletic. I think it's absolutely fair to say that the Wordle audience is being introduced to those different products and experiences, and that's, you know, a big part of our strategy. You know, we are more than the news. It's a, you know, it's a solar system of products that help people engage with the world, and you know, Wordle's playing a big part in that.
And you recently launched Chess Puzzle. So tell us how that fits into this overall puzzle.
Yeah, very excited. Thanks for mentioning that. We started on Monday with a new chess puzzle series called Chess Replay. This exists on our site. It's as part of our gameplay column, actually, and you can think of it as like an interactive chess column. There's been a great history of chess column at the New York Times. It's been dormant for quite a while, and we were really excited to bring it back in this kind of new interactive format, so you can, you know, basically solve, you know, it's chess games from history and sort of exciting moments and scenarios from famous matches, and you are trying to solve for the best moves and sort of recreate those scenarios. So they're little logic puzzles, chess puzzles. We're doing one a day for this week, and then we're going to offer one new puzzle per week going forward. We partnered with Daniel Naroditsky on this. He's a chess grandmaster who's written books about chess, teaches chess, and has a pretty big following as a competitor himself. And what a thrilling like collaboration with him! Such an amazing person, and then our team, you know, really stepped up and delivered something that we think is pretty special. So yeah, we're excited about it.
Has Wordle totally blotted out the sun though for these other games that you all introduce?
Well, I don't think so. No, we're you know, it's a little bit early, but we're seeing like really exciting engagement with the chess puzzle. And it's a very different thing. It's not, you know, it's not a game per se. It's not, you know, it's really more of a column, and and it has its own space. And, you know, there's a lot of chess enthusiasts in the world and that are really excited about what we're doing there. So I don't think it competes in any way. And, you know, for the Spelling Bee, I would say, you know, the Spelling Bee has definitely grown significantly in popularity, you know, since Wordle happened. So Wordle has been very, very good for Spelling Bee.
What do you play most often? What's your favorite?
I mean, I play Wordle every day. I got my Wordle in just as we were preparing for this. But my go-tos are Wordle, Spelling Bee, and the Crossword Mini.
Hmm. I know you've probably been asked this 100 times, but what do you think explains the appeal of Wordle? Why do people love it so much?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. First of all, it's very approachable. The solution is a common word. We all understand. It's a really great game. Like, you guess a word and it gives you feedback on it in real time. And then it's almost like there's another puzzle to solve. And then you make another guess and, you know, you get more feedback and there's another puzzle to solve. So it's just a really fun, good, strong game mechanic in that way. But the fact that the word is common and that we're all trying to solve the same word each day, I think that really made it a very social experience. It fits into your day really well. Like, it doesn't demand too much of your time. You can kind of get it done, and then it leaves you wanting more for the next day. I think finally I would say, you know, that little grid of yellow and green squares that you can share out, like, this is just pure genius and was a very innovative way to share your experience, but without giving away the answer. And it's like a little, it's like a little story of how you solve the puzzle that day. And it's really unique to you. And, you know, that made it very viral. So, all those things together. Yeah. It's just like a magical little game.
Yeah, it's the scarcity. Yeah, it's the sharing. My wife wakes up at 3 a.m. She sends me her Wordle scoreboard before I wake up, and then I try to beat her, and I usually lose every day. It's that kind of interaction that the game creates that's really valuable. And now, Jonathan, I've got my 5-year-old trying to play. So are you thinking about a kid Wordle? Are you thinking about other extensions? Are there going to be ways to expand this out?
I hope so, and I think so. And we're thinking about all those things. You know, for now, the focus is, like I said, like, let's get this well integrated into our system. Let's protect people's stats and streaks and have those properly stored. And you know, I think WordleBot has been a great example of bringing more value to Wordle. And we're looking at all kinds of things we can do in the future.
I'm telling you, kid Wordle, maybe it's 4 letters instead of 5. My daughter would love it. I mean, everybody has a version of that, right? Everyone has a connection to Wordle, and that's one of the things that makes it really unique. When you hear people's stories, how do you react to them? What have you learned from people who tell you about their play in the game?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, Wordle kind of brought us all together, right, at a time when we really need that. And it's, you know, it doesn't matter kind of like who you are, where you come from, what, you know, what else is going on. Like, it's just a way to have a moment. It's a way for people to keep in touch with friends and family. It lights up a whole new, you know, WhatsApp thread or your message thread or however you're sharing, whether it's social media. But like, it opens up a new channel for connection in a way that's really fun and playful. So we've definitely seen that. And it's very inspiring to see a game that brings kind of the world together. It's so cool.
So it sounds like there's going to be a day where Wordle on my phone and Wordle on my desktop will be one and the same, that it'll be linked through my New York Times account. That sounds like the priority. Am I getting that right?
That's exactly right. And that's in beta now. So I've actually tested it out, you know, locally for, you know, inside of our team. It's working. So I'm not overstepping by saying that's coming soon.
Right. And what's not coming, at least, you know, in the foreseeable future, is putting it behind a paywall. I get the sense from you, you say never say never, you know, the same way that, you know, no company would. But for now, the priority is get even more people to play this for free and get them hooked on it.
You know, at the moment, we see no reason to kind of change what's working so well about the game and, keeping it available to everybody. And then, you know, we're really seeing and are really happy to see the engagement of the Wordle audience with our other games. yeah, we're kind of pleased with how that strategy is working.
So, Jonathan, tell us your average Wordle score. Are you a two or three usually? Are you a six? Where do you usually end up?
I'm like, I would like to say par, maybe a little below par. But, you know, if you haven't heard this analogy, Wordle is a little bit like golf. So a four is a par, a three is a birdie, you know, five's a bogey. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there having fun sort of creating 18 holes of Wordle. So if you haven't heard of that, you might try that with your friends and, you know, play for 18 days straight and keep track of your birdies and bogeys. But yeah, I end up around a four. I got it in one about, I don't know, 5-6 weeks ago, and nobody believed me because I work for New York Times Games, but I did actually just nail it in one, and that was a great feeling. So hope for everyone out there to have that feeling at some point.
That hole in one. I hadn't heard of the 18 holes of Wordle yet. I want to go try that.
Yeah, you can do it, you know, just create a Google sheet and get your friends to sign up, have someone just organize it. But, you know, play every day, everyone sends in their scores, and you just track it like you would 18 holes of golf. And at the end of it, see who's, you know, under par, over par, and who the winner is. And,
that's clever.
You know, for some people, like put some skin in the game, you know, $5 entry, you know, can be fun as well. Not condoning that, just saying I've heard that.
I bet a year from now that's all going to be coded into the app. It's all, you're going to have scoreboards and competitions. I can see it all coming down the road. Jonathan Knight, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap on this week's Reliable Sources podcast. Thanks for joining us here in your audio feed. We'll see you on your television stream this Sunday, every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern time on CNN. Thank you for tuning in.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.